I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon and welcome. This is What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer. And today we're going to talk fecal engineering because behold, lo, a miracle has occurred. A company has come up with a digester for livestock waste that will transform our waterways. And to talk about that particular digester is Craig Scott, who is Vice President of Capital Markets and Investor Relations. Mr. Scott participated in several private placements for Bion. It's called Bion Technologies, folks. In 1993, when he was then licensed with the National Association of Securities Dealers as a registered representative, he left the securities industry in 1996 to take a position with Bion, where he was instrumental in business development, capital raising, and developing public and market awareness of Bion. Congratulations, and thank you for joining us today, Craig. It's good to hear you.
Well, thanks for having me, Katie.
Oh, I'm delighted. I mean, I think everyone should literally be just, you know, throwing their caps in the air with joy at the news that some company has finally come up with a solution for manure lagoons. So tell us, what is that solution? What do you guys do?
Well, Katie, over the last 23 years, we have developed a comprehensive treatment platform. And when I say platform, I'm talking about a technology platform that is modular and that allows us to provide not only comprehensive treatment of the livestock waste, but also to recover many of the assets that are in that waste stream that are now being wasted downstream and are really one of the biggest problems in our water quality in the country today. Our technology can remove up to 95% of nitrogen and phosphorus in the waste stream, essentially eliminates ammonia emissions, reduces greenhouse gases by 90%, and all but eliminates any pathogens or hormones or antibiotics that are left over in that waste stream. So, again, it's a comprehensive solution. It's also a refinery to recapture those assets that we're losing today.
So those assets would be treated like manure, essentially, but like manure without all of those chemicals in it, which you could then happily and cheerfully spread about your garden and farmland. And also you're saying you can reclaim the nitrogen and the phosphorus in a way that, if I'm not mistaken, you said it goes from inert to active or vice versa. In any case, it can be returned to the soil without fear of harming waterways in the future. Is that correct?
That is correct. Nitrogen and part of the phosphorus that comes out of livestock waste is highly reactive. It's very mobile,
right.
and it is the primary problem in our waterways. But what Bion's technology does is stabilize that nitrogen and the reactive phosphorus so that it's a much more usable form, and in fact, we are recovering it in an industry standard byproduct form, which, you know, creates value for the farmer, and more importantly, it creates a mechanism to get that stuff off the farm so that we can start to reduce those concentrations.
Yeah. So, in other words, people can basically harvest products from their waste, you know, lagoons. But I mean, aren't we talking about very large operations here? We're talking about, a Cargill facility. We're talking about a Smithfield, right? Or a Purdue.
Well, certainly the economics work better as the scale increases.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, we are making advances in our technology that are bringing it to small, that are going to make it economically feasible for smaller and smaller operations.
Wow, fantastic. I did not realize that, Craig. Now, tell us how I know you can't reveal any trade secrets, but basically, how does this work and why is it different from what many plants are already using, which is called the anaerobic digester? How does it differ from the anaerobic digester?
Right. Well, anaerobic digestion is a centuries-old technology. Obviously, it's gotten better. But it's really focused on recovering renewable energy from the waste stream. It's really not an environmental solution. Now, understand it does have some environmental benefits. It does reduce greenhouse gases. It does reduce odors. But it really does nothing for the nutrient problem. And, in fact, it actually exacerbates it because the anaerobic digestion process through typical digestion increases ammonia emissions.
Oh.
And ammonia emissions are a problem for several reasons. First of all, they cause some health issues because they're a precursor to the formation of PM2.5, small particulate matter.
Uh-huh.
But it also is a transport mechanism for nitrogen because ammonia volatilizes to the atmosphere and then it's spread around and then it comes back down through atmospheric deposition and just creates more reactive nitrogen in the entire system.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's in an area where the only way you can get to it is through stormwater runoff, and that is very, very expensive. So it makes a lot more sense to capture it at the source.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm literally twittering like a cricket here at the thought of all of these wastewater lagoons being cleaned up with Bion Technologies, which I hope to be soon a very happy owner. How about for human waste? Can we imagine using this in municipalities to clean up human waste?
Probably not. I mean, what really drives the economics of Bion's technology is the concentrated waste that you can get on site at a livestock facility. When you get to a municipal waste environment, you've got that waste is diluted by millions of gallons of water, and
right.
We really lose that economic edge.
I see. Okay, good question. I mean, good answer. Absolutely. So who is mostly going to buy Bion Tech? Let's get into the nitty gritty of this. Like, what does it cost? Who's going to buy it? How will that be financed? I mean, obviously, we don't need actual figures, Craig, but just kind of a ballpark.
That's good, Katie, because the cost. The cost of the system is really going to be dependent on a number of factors. First of all, how many animals are we looking at?
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, what type of animals? Are they hogs? Is it beef cattle? Is it dairy?
Mm-hmm.
And third, maybe the location as well. Obviously, mm-hmm. scale is the biggest factor. But Bion really has two business models. One is the ability to come into an existing farm and clean up that problem. And install controls that allow us to recapture these nutrients that clean the water. The other business model is really predicated on an industry solution.
Mm-hmm.
And that industry solution gives us the ability now to build livestock facilities. And I know sometimes this is kind of a touchy subject.
Mm.
But I think a lot of the problems with large-scale livestock is its environmental footprint.
Absolutely. No question about it.
And a lot of savings can be had. Let's say that we eliminate that environmental footprint.
Right.
Now we can look at locating these facilities in places that make more sense strategically, that reduce transportation costs,
uh-huh.
reduce carbon footprint. And it really opens up an entirely new way of looking at the entire distribution chain, because right now the industry is really hamstrung by that footprint, that environmental footprint.
Uh-huh.
And you've got a corn belt that's moved farther north. You've got animals in locations where they really shouldn't be economically. And if you can get rid of that environmental footprint, now we can look at rationalizing that distribution chain so that it makes more sense.
Huh. Now, you guys are operating a facility at a dairy farm in Pennsylvania. Is that right?
That's correct. It's at the Kreider Farms.
Right.
In,
tell us a little
Lancaster
bit about
County,
that. How many cattle are involved? How many dairy cows are involved in that farm?
He's got about 1,200 active milkers
uh-huh.
at Kreider, and we installed a system there in 2012 that has now received a full water quality management permit. It's the only livestock facility in this country that has a full water quality management permit, just like a municipal wastewater treatment plant would have. It's an indication of the level of treatment and monitoring and control that we have.
Mm-hmm.
But the Kreider Farm also has about 5-6 million poultry. He has a layer operation.
Whoa.
And we intend, as soon as some of these policy issues that I'm sure we're going to talk about are resolved, we intend to start construction of phase two, which will treat the waste from those poultry as well.
Well, so what are the policy issues, Craig? What are the roadblocks to many, many more people adopting using this technology? Because, I mean, like I said, it does seem like kind of a magic bullet here. I mean, you'd think that, you know, the government would be like insisting that people implement this technology and maybe even give them tax incentives or something like that to make it happen. So what's holding up the show here?
Well, I think what's holding things up is really just the time it takes to make major policy changes in this country. I mean, we have a status quo that's really grown up around the Clean Water Act for the last 45 years.
Right.
And, you know, you've got a lot of processes in a regulatory framework that are really kind of cast in stone here. Those regulatory policies are really directed at what we call the point sources, which is essentially anything with a smokestack or a discharge pipe that you can measure, such as municipal wastewater treatment,
right,
power plants, things like that. But what we're finding is that we have spent, and we continue to spend more and more money on these point sources. Water quality continues to decline, and
yes,
that's because we are ignoring the largest source of these nutrients. Nutrients are the largest cost driver in water treatment, and the primary source of nutrients is upstream from these point sources and resides in agriculture and particularly livestock production.
Huh, wow. So, but what about agricultural runoff that is just from crop cultivation? There's a lot of that's also a bugaboo in the in the industrial scale agriculture, because so many of the pesticides and herbicides are running off, and as well as the fertilizers are part of the runoff problem and part of the nutrient problem. Can you guys
right.
deal with that
obviously
too?
Obviously, that's a very large factor. We are of the opinion, frankly, that the livestock waste side of that equation is really by far the biggest problem.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, and in fact, you've got a lawsuit going on in Iowa right now, the Waterworks
yes.
lawsuit, just about that problem. And that's because they've installed these tile drains that drain these fields and shoot that nitrogen right down into the water supply of
right.
Des Moines, Iowa. And they're now having to implement very costly controls to remove it. So it's a very complex problem. There is no silver bullet, to answer your comment. There really is no silver bullet.
Don't
here.
Burst
it's going
my
to
bubble,
take a
Craig.
Combination of solutions working together to solve this problem. You know, the livestock industry is a large part of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you and I discussed, the livestock industry is willing and ready to be engaged in the problem. And
yeah.
and by installing or by changing these policies and creating a pathway for, you know, some of the money that we're spending up, you know, downstream and not spending very effectively, and to redirect some of that spending to these upstream solutions is really the answer.
Yeah.
And everybody really does have to work together here.
Amazing. That's well, from your lips to God's ear, as they say.
Yeah. Sometimes we get involved in social issues, I think, and really fail to see reason in some of these issues.
Well, the thing is that these, the odor problems and the waste disposal problems are sort of community issues. They're quality of life issues. And that's where I find it astonishing that municipalities or you know, state governments are not getting more involved in finding the solution, say, in a North Carolina or in Iowa where hog farming is so prevalent, you know, and that does really create, it stinks, man. It's a fact. And it's a drag. And there's a lot of ammonia in the air and people have lung issues. It's like, I just can't believe that this is, you know, that these antiquated regulations are slowing down livestock producers from adding this technology to their quiver, as it were. You know, I'm just like, I'm not getting what the regulation is that's saying to somebody, no, you can't do this. Like, what is that?
Well, I think part of the problem, Katie, is this is all relatively new.
Yeah.
Certainly, it's taken a long time to get here. There's been numerous studies, you know, both independent as well as some not so independent, that, you know, have put out various opinions on the issue and how to best solve it. But at the end of the day, you know, we didn't have solutions like Bion Technologies a few years ago,
right?
Or at least they weren't accepted. So we really were limited in our options. And we had to focus on these point sources. And frankly, you know, and you and I have discussed this, the livestock industry was not, you know, ready for change. They didn't, you know, what they saw were huge costs coming their way
yeah.
that they just really had no way to bear. So what we're doing is I think we're getting to a point now where the policy changes do make sense. And I think, you know, particularly in Pennsylvania, both the legislature as well as, you know, the Auditor General, who released a report last week, have recognized that there are better solutions here.
Right.
Bion is certainly one. There are others out there.
Uh-huh.
We are very focused on the wet waste, but there's a lot of people out there that can provide solutions, particularly on the poultry side.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's really, you know, certainly things take a long time in changing bureaucracy and changing the status quo. But I really do think we're there. I think we're really at a tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
The technologies are there. The political will is there. Certainly the environmental problem has been identified. The sources have been identified. And I think everybody's ready for change.
Yeah. Well, I forgot to mention at the top of this segment that I had interviewed one of your colleagues about 6 years ago when I first started doing mm-hmm. this show. And I was blown away by the technology then. And since then, you've gone through quite a bit of sort of new iterations. You have a whole, quite a different platform, I think, now than you did at the time. It was a much more sort of simplistic kind of closed loop thing. And I don't remember him saying that you could filter out chemicals like hormones or antibiotics. And by the way, how do you do that? Just curious.
Really, the biology in the system is it eats everything,
uh-huh.
Katie.
It eats everything.
You know, you wouldn't want to swim in the thing. It really, bacteria are, and these are naturally occurring bacteria. Make sure we understand that.
Of course.
But they eat everything. The nitrogen, the phosphorus, I mean, they get it all.
Uh-huh. Wow, it's amazing. I mean, I'm so thrilled with the whole thing. I can hardly stand it. So the next step for you guys is what? How are you going to proceed? Like now that that the livestock industry is starting to, perk up their ears and say, "Hey, wow!" In fact, I should also mention that where I saw a mention of your company again was on the webpage for the Global Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. Now
right.
That's we're talking really big players there, Craig, huh?
Really
Absolutely.
Big. And
that's
we're
exciting.
Very happy to see that. You and I discussed this. You know,
mm-hmm.
at first, I think the livestock industry was not so ready to embrace us.
No, they weren't.
I think that now that they are, have moved forward in their thinking and understand that change has to come,
yeah.
we are much more accepted by the livestock industry. And in fact, the legislation that's been introduced in Pennsylvania has the support of National Milk. It has the support of the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau, PennAg.
Wow.
A lot of the major state and national livestock production interests recognize the fact that change does have to come.
Right.
And instead of, putting their heads in the sand and the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil,
yeah.
they are now willing to engage in the process and be part of the solution.
Right.
I think the primary concern is what is it going to cost?
Yeah, absolutely.
And ultimately, we all know that cost comes home to the taxpayer or the consumer.
Right. Well, let's, Jack, let's take a really short break, and we'll be right back with Craig Scott from Bion Technologies. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Senate bill in Pennsylvania that is going through the process and what that's going to mean. So stay tuned.
And for the break song, this is called Anxieties by a great group called The Landing, New York City based. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
To be alive.
This is What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights. We're talking today about fecal engineering, one of my favorite topics. And on the phone with me is Craig Scott, who is the Vice President and Capital Management, Capital Markets and Investor Relations for Bion Technologies. This is a new, not so new company, but they have a very sophisticated patent or series of patents out that will that promises to revolutionize the industrial livestock industry. If they would only just listen up. Now, I think we need to, like, Craig, we need to, like, get their ear and set up a meeting with somebody important.
Well, Katie, I think we have their ear, frankly, it's not just an understanding of impending regulation if the problem isn't cleaned up, but really, you know, a technology like Bion's brings other benefits to the livestock industry, and you know, we really didn't talk about that, but
let's hear them.
One of the things that, you know, consumers are driving is sustainable practices,
yes.
Sustainable production practices. And the livestock industry is obviously not a particularly sustainable practice as it's been done traditionally. That said, you know, if you come in and you do clean the problem up and you increase efficiencies and increase resource efficiency, now you've got a solution to, you know, people like McDonald's and Costco and Walmart that are all, you know, moving towards sustainable practices for their consumer products. I mean, the consumers are demanding it.
Yep.
And there are technologies like Bion out there that can deliver those sustainable products. Again, I think, you know, one of the issues is to get away from an automatic dislike of large-scale livestock production because of that traditional environmental footprint, mm-hmm. and start looking at the possibilities with large-scale production when you've got the problem cleaned up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just, to me, it's just a giant win-win. As you and I have discussed in the past, the industrial-scale livestock production is not going to go away anytime soon. And so, you know, might as well just bite the bullet, accept what the status quo is, and make it better rather than, you know, waving your arms in the air and saying, we can't have this, it's got to stop. I mean, it just never will. So we have to, like, go forward and make it better. And that's what you guys are doing. So tell us about the bill in the Senate. In the Pennsylvania Senate that is going through the process right now. What is that all about, and what will it mean in terms of giving you more options for selling your technology to livestock producers?
Well, Senate Bill 724 was introduced last week in the Senate Environmental Resources and Energy Committee. Mm-hmm. And what the bill will do is establish a program that will allow Pennsylvania taxpayers to reduce their costs for their Chesapeake Bay compliance. And it's
right.
going to do that by setting up, it's going to engage the private sector, first of all. And it's going to set up a competitively bid request for proposal program, an RFP.
Uh-huh.
And it will be available and open to any source of nutrient reduction. And what makes this work is the establishment of what's called a verified reduction credit.
Right.
And that really came about last year. And essentially what it did is it established a common currency so that now we can compare apples and apples, and we can compare them based on cost.
Uh-huh.
So Senate Bill 724, I keep wanting to say 994, what it was called last year, 724 will establish this competitively bid program where these nutrient reductions that have to be verified, a Department of Environmental Protection approved verification plan, and it will allow these permitted point sources to acquire reductions at a lower cost. And we're not talking about a small differential in cost here. We're talking about an order of magnitude of 4 or 5, 10 times cheaper than what they're looking at today.
Mm. So can you, like, what are they spending today versus what you anticipate as the savings?
Well, there are several studies that are out there. The Legislative Budget and Finance Committee, a bipartisan report that was put out by Pennsylvania. You've got the Chesapeake Bay Commission report. Mm-hmm. There's a University of Maryland report. The numbers vary, Katie.
Okay.
But for municipal wastewater treatment, you're looking at somewhere in the $40 to $50 per pound annually.
Okay.
For agricultural best management practices, planting cover strips and you know, other agricultural practices that can be implemented, not a technology solution. Uh-huh. There, even those are going to cost somewhere in the $40 to $50 range. The next step is going to be, you know, if these states don't comply, is going to be stormwater controls that are going to be mandated by EPA. Uh-huh. Those are going to run anywhere from $380 to $600 per pound. Wow. Annually. Bion can produce on-site livestock verified credits for somewhere in the $8 to $12 range.
That's
okay. So there is a dramatic difference in cost, and it's all about catching that nitrogen at its source and treating it while it's still concentrated. Because once it's been allowed to escape to the environment, if you have to take that out using stormwater treatment, your costs go up, you know, by 20-fold.
That was what I was looking for, was that kind of sort of dramatic differential.
It is dramatic.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're talking about credits, though, this is something that I think a lot of people struggle with, and I know I do. Like, when you say that, for example, implementing your technology, the way they measure it is the total maximum daily load parameter credits. Can you define what that means by a credit, and how would you trade credits? Would it be like a cap and trade, so that one guy who continues to pollute can like pay the other guy for polluting less? Is that what you mean by that?
Yes, sort of. I think what you're going to see is the entire process is going to evolve into one of direct procurement as opposed to trading. You know, trading leaves a bad taste in some people's mouths.
Yeah.
They think that it gives you a right to pollute. What it's really about is reducing cost. Because, you know, if you look at the point sources that would be trading credits, they're already subject to very, very strict regulation. And they're already removing very high percentages of nitrogen and phosphorus. To ask them to do more is going to cost a lot of money, and you're going to get very small incremental improvements. So from a financial perspective, it makes more sense to go to these unregulated, these non-point sources, and essentially do the same thing. You're going to accomplish the same thing. You're going to reduce the nitrogen flowing to the bay. You're just going to do it a whole lot cheaper.
Going
to do a couple of things. It's going to make your reductions more effective, and it's going to accelerate the implementation. Mm-hmm. Because if you think that we can sit back and wait for regulation on the livestock industry, you know, the Bay and the Great Lakes and the Mississippi River Basin, Gulf of Mexico, they're just going to get worse.
Yeah, an incentive
program really provides, as you said, it's a win-win solution. And, you know, whether you like credit trading or not, it's going to save the taxpayer money, and it's going to ultimately accelerate the cleanup of the Bay.
Right. I mean, it's just that it's an incredible thing. So, I'm still like sort of struggling with the whole credit thing. But how will Bion, for instance, verify the total maximum daily load reductions? So you install your thing on a farm or a big agricultural concern, a big livestock concern, and all of the water, all of the wastewater goes through your system, and you can capture exactly how much it's removing.
Yeah.
You can
we're measuring that.
Right.
We're monitoring that in real time. We're actually measuring those reductions. So, you know, through a mass balance equation, we know exactly how much nitrogen and phosphorus goes in, and we know exactly how much comes out. We get that delta, and that is the credit. So, you know, and again, it goes back to Bion's level of monitoring and control that allowed for the full water quality permit and it allowed for the verification plan. I mean, we track that process through every step. You know, we have mechanical processes, biological processes, chemical processes, and thermal processes, and we know exactly what happens at every stage until we get to the clean water and the byproducts at the end. So we know exactly what goes in, we know exactly what comes out, and we get the difference.
And who gave you the verification? Did you tell me that already? Who was
the... Yes, the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection.
Uh-huh.
They issued a verification plan that tracks those numbers and validates essentially what we say we're removing from that waste stream.
Right. And has that verification traveled to other states or into the national EPA, for example, which is right now struggling with its own Clean Water Act, you know, sort of?
Well, certainly. And understand that Pennsylvania's, you know, nutrient credit trading program really, you know, it's an EPA-approved plan. The EPA does not approve technologies or plans. That's left for the state at the state level, as long as as they're meeting the EPA mandates. But at the end of the day, you've got somewhere between 20 and 40 states that have this problem.
Yeah.
I think you've got nutrient trading programs that have been implemented in 20 of those states. And I think, frankly, that everybody is waiting to see what flies between Pennsylvania and the EPA in the Chesapeake Bay.
Right.
And I think that what you're doing is you're establishing a blueprint or a national model that can be adopted by these states, because there's really no point in reinventing that wheel. This livestock issue and excess nutrients from livestock and agriculture are the primary source of nutrients in most of these major watersheds.
Absolutely.
There's no reason to do anything different.
Yeah. No, it makes so much sense to me. So what are the biggest challenges you face in terms of getting, you know, growing out the business and getting other people? Is it legislation issues? Is it like just unfamiliarity with your company or in what you do? Is it what it costs to implement this? Like what's going to, you know, keep this from happening at a grand scale in a rapid way?
I think at this point it's inevitable, Katie. I think the only real issue is timing. I don't think it's if it happens. I think it's when. Certainly the studies are out. We know what the problem is. We've identified what needs to be done to solve it. As new technologies like BIONS come in, you know, they're going to be adopted. We need to get this policy framework tied up. And I think we're moving forward on all those fronts.
Right.
I think sometime here in the next couple of months, you will see, you know, hopefully we're going to see Senate Bill 724 be successful and be adopted by the Pennsylvania Assembly and signed by the governor. And I think you're going to create that model that the rest of the states can now adopt, because, you know, they really do have the same problems and they're facing the same tremendous costs if they don't get to these alternatives. And I really think it is just a question of timing at this point.
Wow, it's very exciting. You must be thrilled. I mean, you've been working on and off with BION for over 20 years, and to finally see the fruits of that labor pay off must be a pretty heady moment for you.
Yes, it is. I like to say I've been tilting windmills for 23 years, and it looks like the windmill's about to fall. And really, it is a common sense solution. And,
yeah.
You know, sometimes it gets a little disappointing or a little frustrating to know that it has taken so long, but, you know, this is a major policy change. You got some very deeply entrenched interests here. This is a $115 billion a year endeavor in this country, just clean water. And, you know, it's grown up around a Clean Water Act for 45 years. And you know, to think that those changes would come quickly would be naive.
Yeah.
But I think at this point that we have enough independent studies and enough recognition of the problem that it's just a genie that can't be stuffed back in the bottle.
Yeah,
you
got
to get to this livestock issue, and if you don't, you downstream, you're just not going to solve the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. No, they have to address this, and it is encouraging that people like the Global Roundtable for Sustainable Beef are at least interested in taking a look at your technology. And do you see this like being implemented around the world, or are there companies that are already more or less doing what you're doing in other heavily, you know, industrialized livestock operations, like in, say, Australia or in Brazil, where the, you know, JBS operates? I mean, who else is looking at this?
Well,
who else is,
you know, it is a global opportunity. That's for sure. This is a problem worldwide. I think the latest figures were something like 700 of these dead zones worldwide. And again, you can trace a lot of it back to livestock.
Yeah.
We have been involved with JBS through the Coalition for an Affordable Bay Solution as part of the solution for the Chesapeake Bay. There is interest with some of the largest producers on getting this problem solved and moving forward with an industry that, you know, I'm sure they'd like to clean their image up a little bit. It's taken a beating over the last few years, and I think everybody is now finally getting on the same page here.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how slow they are to react. I mean, I'm always stunned. I attend, you know, industrial agricultural events as often as I can. And it just blows my mind how what a silo, essentially, that they live in. And because they live in an echo chamber, it's taken such a long time for just basic stuff to penetrate in terms of just like the use of antibiotics, for example, or the use of certain types of hormones, or, you know, or the waste treatment issues, you know, or animal handling issues. It's like, you know, very, very slow movement in any of those directions. But, it, you know, the wheels are turning. I mean, I do see a lot of change in the industry overall, and I'm encouraged by that, certainly, because like we said, it ain't going to go away. So how do you see your technology evolving in the future? Like, where is it? Is there another iteration of BioNTech that's going to be even more efficient or work with a different sector? Like right now you're working mostly with hog and cattle production, and you're saying maybe you're going to go into poultry production?
No, the poultry waste is a little bit different character.
Mm-hmm.
It's drier. There's a lot of different ways to skin that cat, if you will. We're going to stay focused on the wet livestock waste stream, which is dairy, beef, and swine.
Yeah.
That's where our technology really works the best.
I see.
And as far as, moving forward, there's just so much opportunity in the United States, now that this problem is where it is. As far as our technology, it really does a great job on the treatment side.
Yeah.
We are, and we actually filed a new set of patents in September of last year, because we are improving it on the byproduct recovery side, because any revenues that we can produce or any capture of assets or value that we can get on the back end of that system,
right,
just helps offset the operating costs and the technology adoption costs. So it's going to make it an even more acceptable solution. So that's the direction we're going right now, is improving the value of those byproducts.
Mm-hmm.
And as these policies unfold, and the industry embraces the technology that really brings several benefits to them, we think those 23 years are going to be worth it.
I'm excited for you. As I said, I'll be an investor. I guess if people want to learn more about BioNTechnologies, unless there's something else you want to say, Craig, I think I'll wrap it up. But tell us where people can read more about your company and what you're doing.
Well, we've got a pretty comprehensive website. It's BioNTech, just BioNTech.com. Actually, if you check in another week or so, it's going to be even prettier because we're redesigning the site. But, you can either go to the site and read about it. You can call me. My number is listed on that site. And, we really think we've got a great opportunity here. Certainly, there's still some risk, primarily on the timing side, but as an investment for somebody that's looking for socially responsible investment opportunities or is an impact investor, you should take a look at us.
Yeah.
We do trade on the OTC bulletin board.
Yep.
We are characterized as a penny stock, even though we've been around and fully reporting for 23 years. But we are on the bulletin board. Our symbol is BNET, Bob, yep, Nancy, Edward, Tom. And, we invite you to learn more about what we're doing and see if it's a fit.
Thank you so much, Craig. This has been really interesting, and I'm really excited about it. I just think it's the greatest thing, and I'm wish you the best of luck in the coming months. I hope everything works out exactly as you hope it will, and for the sake of all of us who would like to see more clean water flowing in the Great Lakes, the Mississippi, and the Chesapeake Bay, you guys have definitely way ahead of the game, it seems like. So thanks so much for joining me today, and thank you to my sponsor, Kane Winery, who has been sponsoring us ever since we started this radio station. And remember, we're still in the midst of our Kickstarter campaign. We're looking for funding for our new website. Please consider donating if you haven't done so already. We still have about 2 weeks to go, and we're more than halfway to our goal. So we really appreciate the support you've given so far. But looking for just that little bit more, you can give as little as $5. You can give as much as you want. So stay tuned for next week. We'll be talking with the great Tom Philpott about almonds. Talking about water just a little bit more. Thanks for listening, folks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.